turned to smile at whoever was behind the camera in the back seat. My dad's hair is mostly brown still, the wrinkles across his forehead less pronounced. But it's Jonah I can't peel my eyes from. I can actually see his face, free of that unsightly beard and the straggly long hair. When was this taken?
First or second summer I was here. Can't remember.
There's a pause.
Why?
You have dimples, I blurt out. Two low, deeply set dimples that accentuate a perfect pouty-lipped smile and offset sharp cheekbones and a hard, angular jaw. Even the shape of his head is appealing, his blonde hair cropped short to his skull. All beautiful features, many from his Scandinavian mother, I see proof of now, hidden by that unsightly mask of hair. All features that, coupled with those sharp blue eyes, make Jonah almost, dare I say, pretty? And this was at around 21, 22, when he still had a slightly boyish look. 10 years later. I turn to frown at Yeti Jonah and find him smirking at me, as if he knows exactly how attractive he is and can read my mind right now.
So, are we going to do this or what?
He says casually. Excuse me? My cheeks flush.
Work on this website? You brought your computer, right?
Oh. I exhale slowly. Right.
Good, because once this pill kicks in, I'll be lights out for the night.
Setting the picture of my dad and Jonah back on the shelf, I retrieve my laptop from the kitchen and settle myself onto the other end of my couch, acutely aware of Jonah's gaze on me the entire time. You said 1964, right? Jonah? His eyes are shut and his broad chest is rising and falling at a slow rhythm. Jonah, I call out softly. He doesn't stir again. Well, I guess that's that. 20 minutes of help is better than nothing, though I couldn't actually work on the website because, along with the lack of TV, Jonah doesn't have internet. What normal 31-year-old male doesn't have a television and internet access in his house? I shut my laptop and then simply stare at his relaxed face for a moment, chewing my lip in thought. I already knew he wasn't like any other guy I've ever met, and what would possess him to hide a face like that? Lord knows it's not a confidence issue. He seems pretty damn happy with himself. But it's not like he's let himself go, either. He's not slouching on the couch with a bag of Doritos, wiping cheesy fingers over his boiler belly before he reaches for his 10th can of beer. Even lying there in baggy sweatpants and a t-shirt, it's obvious he's fit. A chattering sound calls from outside. Bandit is perched on something in the screened-in porch. His front paws pressed against the glass, staring at me through beady black eyes. I am not letting you in. I shake my head at him. He chatters back in answer and then hops down. An odd thumping noise sounds. Curious what he's up to, I wander over to the window to find him standing next to an empty metal bowl, pawing at it like a dog. You're hungry, I realize, and I guess I'm supposed to feed you. With a reluctant sigh, I head to the kitchen to put Jonah's dinner in the fridge and, I guess, get a can of dog food for his not-pet raccoon. I can't believe I'm doing this, I mutter, pushing the sliding door open, an open can and spoon in hand. Jonah's porch doesn't have much on it, basically just a few shelves and storage bins on one side, and a giant plywood box on the other that I'm guessing is Bandit's haven. There isn't even anywhere to sit. Bandit stands up on his hind legs and paws excitedly at the air. How much does this thing even eat? He's half the size of Tim and Sid, a runt really, and cute as far as raccoons go, I guess. Shoo! Back up! I scold, wary of his sharp claws as I scoop out half of the can's contents, my nose curling in disgust as the congealed mess flops into the bowl. Ugh! I cringe, feeling a slimy chunk land on my hand. Bandit shoves his triangular face in and starts devouring it, not bothering to come up for air. With an overwhelming urge to wash my hands, I turn to head back inside. That's when I notice the small wheels peeking out from beneath a heavy wool blanket tucked into the corner. Wheels that remind me of suitcase luggage wheels. A sneaking suspicion creeps over me, and when I pull back one corner of the blanket and see a silver hard case suitcase, my silver hard case suitcase, I'm left gaping. How the hell did my suitcases end up on Jonah's porch, hiding under a blanket? There's only one way, really. Jonah must have put them there. Which means he's been intentionally keeping my things from me. How did he even get them? I feel my face screw up as I work through the possibilities. Did he fly to Anchorage and get them? If he did, he couldn't have done it today, or yesterday because we were together all day. That means he must have gone the day before, and what, stole my luggage from Billy? He's had my things for days. But why? I glare at the sleeping giant through the window, feeling the overwhelming urge to march in there and slap him awake to explain himself. If he hadn't been in a plane crash today, I might. Fucking Jonah. Have we gone a whole day yet without him irritating the hell out of me? I make a point of banging the doorframe as I drag my suitcases into the house, the hard plastic thumping against the metal. He doesn't stir. I wheel them past the couch, intentionally checking my hip against the side where his head rests, hard enough that I might have earned myself a bruise. Nothing. You son of a bitch, I growl, as my anger boils over, letting the cases roll into the kitchen cabinets with a thud while I go back to get my laptop. I should open the door and let Bandit in. Wouldn't that be something to wake up to, asshole? You sure as hell deserve having your place ransacked. What is he even going to say when I confront him tomorrow? Will he just smile smugly at me and throw a clever line? And what will Agnes and my dad say? Will they shrug it off? Will my dad say he'll have a talk with him? Will Agnes wave her hand and say, oh, he likes to play games or something along those lines again? Looking at him lying there, blissfully dead to the world, that mop of straggly hair scattered over the pillow, that wiry, tangled bush on his face, I should just... I feel the vindictive smile slowly stretch over my face. Chapter 17. You can't walk around downtown Toronto without passing the homeless. They hide in plain sight beneath layers of blankets as they sleep. They sit on street corners with Tim Hortons paper coffee cups held in their grasps, their matted hair hanging over their grim faces, waiting for the loose change of a charitable stranger. I've sometimes wondered what those people look like beneath all that grime and poverty, what a hot shower, a comb, and a razor might do for them, if people might not speed up when they pass them, might not disregard them so quickly, if they might look at them in a different light. Kind of like the way I'm looking at Jonah now, more than a little odd at what kitchen shears and clippers, which I discovered tucked away in a bathroom cabinet, could achieve. It was supposed to be one cut, one highly noticeable chunk taken from the right side of his beard with a pair of scissors, one of those practical jokes that guys play on their friends when their friends pass out drunk on the couch, just enough maiming to force him to take action when he woke up. But then I thought to myself, what if he leaves it like that just to drive me insane? Because that's something Jonah would do. So I started cutting. He didn't stir once. Not when I lopped off handfuls of blood-flecked hair, not when the buzz of the clippers filled the silent living room, not while I carefully, with the most delicate touch, trimmed and combed that formless bush covering half his face. It kept shrinking and shrinking until I had uncovered the full soft lips and the sharp cheekbones and the promise of the chiseled jaw I knew was beneath. Jonah now has a thick but tidy beard, the kind that inspires envy from men, that causes girlfriends and wives to shove magazines into the faces of their bearded significant others demanding, "Make yours look like this." I didn't stop there, though. I hacked off that straggly mop on his head, shaving the sides and back as well as I could given his horizontal position. I left a strip of hair about 2 inches long on the top, which I've styled because, lo and behold, Jonah also had an old bottle of cheap gel tucked away in the vanity. Now I sit back and admire the ruggedly handsome man I uncovered under all that wild, dark ash blonde hair, in peaceful slumber, itching to smooth my hand over his face. He's even more attractive than the picture version I was drooling over earlier. His face filled out with age and weight, the delicate lines making him more masculine. And I wonder, how the hell did this go from a simple act of vindication to me sitting here, fawning over the conniving bastard? I groan. You're an ass even when you're unconscious, aren't you? His head shifts to the right, and I inhale sharply. I hold my breath as his eyelids begin to flicker, and release it with a heavy sigh of relief only after he stills again. I don't want to be here when he wakes up, I realize, as mounting dread shoves aside whatever glory I've been basking in up until now. Because how is Jonah going to react when he sees what I've done to him? Will he laugh it off in a well-played manner? Or did I just go way too far? I mean, I cut off a plane crash survivor's hair while he was sleeping off his injuries. Anxious flutters fill my chest as I scoop up the obvious evidence and dart to the kitchen. This isn't just about his taking my clothes, I remind myself, as I shove my weapons into a drawer and toss the bag of hair under the sink. He's been a dick to me over and over again. I finally snapped. That's what happens when you push someone too far. They snap and cut off all your hair while you're sleeping. I grab the pad of paper and pen that sit on the counter and scrawl a quick note, and then leave it on the side table next to his pills, and a full glass of fresh water for him when he wakes up. A pretty lame peace offering. Where I was intent on using my luggage as a battering ram earlier, now I tiptoe, easing each suitcase out the door and down the steps with painstaking efforts to not make a sound. It's an absolute nightmare, lugging each weighty suitcase across the wet, marshy land, and my arms are burning by the time I finally reach the safety of my dad's house. My dad is settled into his recliner in the living room. He turns away from the baseball highlights on the TV to peer over at me.
How's our guy doing?
Such a simple question, and I'm hit with a sudden wave of guilt. He's asleep. He took some pills that knocked him out.
I'll bet he needs the rest. That was quite a day.
My dad covers his mouth against a bout of coughs. Are you feeling okay? I noticed he was coughing through dinner, too. He waves it off, clearing his throat several times.
Shouldn't have been running through fields is all. So, did you two get a lot done tonight?
A little bit. He passed out pretty fast.
You were there for a while.
There's something odd in his tone. Something I can't pinpoint. I glance at the clock on the wall. It's almost 11. I also fed Bandit and then spent some time checking out books. I stumble over my words, averting my gaze as my cheeks flush, hoping he can't read me well enough yet to know that I'm hiding something. But I can't bring myself to admit what I just did to Jonah. What if my dad says I went too far? What if he's disappointed with me?
Find anything interesting?
What?
The books.
His gaze drops to my empty hands. Oh, no, I'm not a big reader. Anything good on TV?
Nah, I just threw it on for a bit. I was sitting outside on the porch for a while tonight. You and Mabel sure made it look good. Brought me back a few years.
Wait until the sun goes down. We had enough strands of old Christmas lights to crisscross the ceiling twice over. He sighs and, hitting the power button to cut the picture, tosses the remote to the side table.
Maybe tomorrow night. Today's excitement wiped me out.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired too. His movements are slow as he pulls himself out of the chair, collecting his dirty mug.
You sure you're okay? You seem a bit jittery.
I'm fine. Hey, what time are you going in tomorrow morning?
Probably the usual. Before 6, anyway.
I should get a ride in with you since Jonah won't be going anywhere. He chuckles.
A few stitches across his forehead won't keep him away from Wild, even if he can't fly yet.
Right. Okay. Great. I press my lips together. My dad gives me another curious look.
Well, okay then. I'll see you in the morning.
Yep. He spots the two suitcases sitting in the doorway by the kitchen.
Hey, told you they'd turn up.
Yeah, they turned up all right, I mutter under my breath. Do I tell him what Jonah did? A part of me wants to tattle on his golden boy, but a bigger part wants to hear Jonah's bullshit reasoning myself first. Besides, this is between him and me now. My dad frowns.
How'd they get here anyway?
A cab, just as I was coming home. His frown deepens as if he knows that's a flat-out lie, but then he shrugs.
Well, you've got all your clothes now. That's good. Night.
Night, Dad. He pauses to give me a small, satisfied smile and then disappears into his room. I let out a shaky sigh the second my bedroom door shuts behind me. Jonah got what he deserved. Besides, it's not like I disfigured him, and hair grows back. If he prefers looking like he belongs in a cave, carrying a club around, it won't take him too long to transform back. I set to unpacking my things. 244. Someone drew nipples on 244 ducks. That's 1,464 hand-drawn nipples in my father's kitchen.
Calla?
I turn to find my dad standing in the kitchen doorway. Hey, I'm making coffee for us. It's just finishing up. His surprised gaze shifts from me to his coffee maker as it noisily dispenses the last drips of hot liquid from its spout, and then back to me.
You feeling okay?
Yeah, I couldn't sleep, so I figured I'd get ready and go in with you. He studies my tired eyes that no amount of concealer and Visine seemed to be able to fix.
I didn't sleep well last night either,
he admits, the bags under his eyes telling.
I'll bet seeing Jonah like that unsettled you.
Yeah, maybe. My sleepless night has everything to do with Jonah, but less to do with the crash, and more to do with his potential wrath when he wakes up and finds out he's been shorn like a farm animal. Will he laugh it off, or will we be back to square one in our relationship? Mutual loathing. Anyway, I figured I might as well get an early start to the day. With you.
Nothing wrong with that.
He pours himself a cup from the pot and takes a sip. And starts choking.
How many spoonfuls did you put in?
Whatever the package said. Is it bad? He presses his lips together and shakes his head, and then says in a tight voice,
It's great.
I give him a flat look. You're lying.
It might be a tad bit strong.
He smiles as he takes another sip, turning away to hide his grimace. I'm sorry. I don't know how to make coffee. You don't have to finish it.
You kidding?
Another forced sip, followed by a fake, thirst-quenching sound.
My daughter made this here cup just for me. Damn straight I'm gonna drink it.
I'm lost in laughter as I mix my own cup, extra heavy on the soy milk, and watch him force down the rest of it, alternating between dramatic cringes and full-body shudders. Setting his dish in the sink, he grabs his vest and keys.
Well, if I wasn't awake before...
I trail him out the door and toward his truck.
Those are nice.
He admires my red hunter boots with a smile and nods at the red flannel jacket from Jonah folded over my arm.
And they match.
Shockingly, at least I finally have something appropriate to wear. I dug out my favorite ripped blue jeans, coupling them with my silvery, off-the-shoulder knit shirt and matching lace bra.
You had every right to be frustrated. It takes some getting used to, the way things work around here.
My luggage problems weren't on account of Alaska, I want to say. They had everything to do with the sleeping giant next door. Both our gazes fall on the quiet yellow house.
Wonder how he's feeling this morning,
my dad murmurs. He climbs into the driver's side, slamming the door shut behind him. The engine comes to life. I round the hood of the truck, unable to steer my eyes away from Jonah's house. My breath catches as I think, maybe, the gauzy kitchen curtain shifted, just a touch. But it's 6 a.m. Jonah's not up yet, I assure myself. Still, I scuttle into my seat and buckle my seatbelt, my guilty conscience not abated. My dad's hands are on the steering wheel, but he makes no move to drive.
Maybe one of us should stick our head in and check on him.
Shouldn't we let him sleep, though? It's early. My fingertips drum over my knee at a rushed pace as I keep my eyes forward.
I feel the suspicious gleam in his gaze as he regards me.
Are you sure you're okay, Calla? You're acting twitchy.
Am I? I say nonchalantly. Must be that coffee.
No. This started last night.
He hesitates.
Did something happen between you two?
I can't take it anymore. Besides me finding my luggage on Jonah's porch, which will be my official excuse when I'm questioned for my crime. My dad's eyes widen.
Jonah had your luggage?
Hiding under a blanket. My dad heaves a sigh of exasperation.
That son of a... I'll have a talk with... Oh, looks like he is up.
He nods towards Jonah's door as it eases open. My stomach clenches.
I'll go over there later and make sure he...
His words drift as a stiff-bodied Jonah steps out onto the porch in the same sweatpants and t-shirt he fell asleep in. We're too far away to make out the stitched gash on his forehead. I'm not, however, too far away to read the stony gaze in his eyes as he turns his attention to us, his muscular arms folded over his broad chest, to glare at me. Silence hangs inside the truck for several beats, my dad's eyebrows sitting halfway up his forehead. Finally,
Calla, how long after Jonah fell asleep did you stay?
Not sure, I mutter, averting my gaze to the road. His tone is mild, but I can't for the life of me read it.
And what was it you said you did again? Worked on the website, fed Bandit, and then, oh yeah, you looked at Jonah's book collection. That's all?
Yep, I lie with as much conviction in my voice as I can muster.
There's nothing I'm forgetting.
Definitely nothing, but we should get going, like right now. I finally dare to look over to find my dad pursing his lips together tight, doing a poor job of smothering his grin.
Yes, I think you're right.
He throws his truck into gear. We lurch into motion and begin heading down the driveway, swerving to miss the deeper of the potholes. Dead silence fills the truck. And then...
Those muscle relaxers they gave him must be strong,
he muses. So strong, I agree. My dad's gaze burns into my profile until I can't ignore it any longer. I turn to meet his eyes to see the twinkle dancing in them. We burst out with laughter. My own is mixed with an overwhelming wave of relief. My dad doesn't seem to be angry with me, at least. By the time the truck reaches the main road, my dad is struggling through a coughing fit, brought on by his mirth.
Oh, Calla, you've really asked for it now.
He deserved it.
Yeah, I'd say so. But Jonah always has to have the last word. He's not going to let you get away with this.
I fold my arms over my chest stubbornly. He should be thanking me. Now people can see his face. My dad's brow lifts curiously.
And seeing his face is a good thing?
He's less likely to be trapped in a cage and brought to the zoo. Do they even have a zoo in Alaska? I doubt it. Dad bursts out in another round of gut-wrenching laughter.
For a while there, I was thinking something might have happened between you two. You know, with the tension from the accident and all. Maybe you two... you know.
He gives me a look. My cheeks begin to burn. That's what you were thinking happened last night?
I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. He's smart and hardworking. Seems pretty popular with the ladies.
He chuckles nervously.
A father can hope, can't he?
What did he just say? Is my father actually hoping that Jonah and I hook up? Me and Jonah. A flash of that face last night, a peaceful, handsome Jonah in slumber, hits me. I shove it aside. I'm not falling for some sky cowboy, I say resolutely. Dad chuckle coughs.
God, Calla, you remind me so much of your mother sometimes.
That's what she called the pilots up here, I admit sheepishly.
Yeah, well, can't say she's wrong as far as Jonah's concerned. It's probably for the best anyway. You don't need to be repeating our mistakes,
he murmurs, turning into the road that leads to Alaska Wild. Chapter 18. Agnes's eyes squint as she leans in and scrutinizes my computer screen.
I like the other one better.
I toggle back to the first picture framing option. Yes, that one. It reminds me of a postcard. Agnes stands and slides her glasses off.
It's really coming along, Calla, and fast.
I lock the setting. I should have it up in another day or two.
You make it look so easy.
It is easy, I swear. I'll show you how to do everything. And if there's anything you need help with, I'm always just an email away. How odd it is that only a week ago we were emailing as complete strangers, yet to meet. My phone rings then, and Diana's sardonic duck-lip selfie fills the screen. I've got to take this, I murmur, climbing from my seat. I knew the call was coming. The text I sent her 10 minutes ago would have her frothing at the mouth for details. Do you want me to grab you a water? Agnes waves it off with a no thanks and returns to her desk. Taking a deep breath, I answer my phone, thankful that the staff room is empty for the moment.
You did not,
Diana gasps, in a shocked, I can't believe you did that way. The Yeti is no longer a Yeti.
Oh my God, Calla, how angry is he?
I'm not exactly sure yet. Do you remember that time Keegan passed out drunk and his team shaved his yes and ew? Please don't bring that story up ever again. Diana's brother is like a brother to me, and the mental picture is still disturbing on so many levels years later.
Okay, I'm hiding in the mailroom and I have like 30 more seconds before Beefstick comes looking for me,
she whispers conspiratorially, and I'm picturing the tall blonde bombshell crouching behind the photocopier in her pencil skirt.
I don't have time for specifics right now. Just give me the final verdict.
The final verdict is... I open the fridge and begin testing the bottles of water to find the coldest one. He's hot.
Really? Like, how hot?
You know that Viking fitness model guy's profile page I showed you a couple of weeks ago? Pretty much the only guy with a full beard that I've ever found attractive. She moans her confirmation. Yeah, like that. Only better.
Tell me you got a picture.
No, I scoff. I'm not going to take a picture of the guy while he's drugged unconscious.
Really, Calla?
That's the line you drew? She mocks. I cringe at myself. I know.
So he's hot, but he's still a jerk, right?
Yeah, total jerk. I mean, not really. Sometimes he's totally a jerk and I want to punch him in the face, I amend. And then other times, I don't mind him at all, actually. I'm not even as angry as I was last night anymore. Now I'm more focused on the growing tension that gnaws at my gut. What if Jonah is genuinely pissed at me? What if he wants nothing to do with me anymore?
So, are you two going to hook up?
What? I squeal. No.
He's hot and you have no emotional attachment to him. Perfect rebound material.
I know. God, first my father, now my best friend. Hookups aren't my thing. You know that. I'm either not able to detach my heart from the situation and end up hurt, or I decide I don't like the guy and end up full of regret. Besides, he likes leggy blondes. You come up here and sleep with him.
Come on! You need a rebound.
Trust me, I don't. I haven't given Corey a second's thought since I've been here, which only proves I didn't make a mistake in ending it when I did.
Good! So then do the Viking.
I am not doing the Viking. I burst out laughing, realizing how much I miss her. I wouldn't even know where to start with him. How does a woman initiate something with a guy like Jonah, who's as likely to laugh at her for her attempts as throw her caveman style onto the bed? She'd have to have a brass-coated spine just to try. Diana groans.
Ugh. Beefstick's calling my name. His voice is so annoying, I've started having nightmares. Gotta go now. Go and get this guy, and then call me tonight. We need to plan out the next week. Calla and Dee can't just be all Dee while you're off, flying around with your hot Viking.
I know, I'm sorry. Things have been crazy around here.
Calla and Dee has fallen by the wayside in my thoughts, right next to my ex-boyfriend.
And no, I'm not hooking up with Jonah. Satisfied that I found the coldest water, I hip-check the fridge door. That would be a bad idea.
Ah!
Jonah is standing a foot away. Call you later, I mumble and hit end.
As handsome as he was last night, freshly groomed and peaceful in slumber, the sight of him towering over me now, the muscles in his cut jaw clenching as he pins me down with steely blue eyes, is as awe-inspiring as it is intimidating. His beard remains unruffled, and his hair, though somewhat disheveled, holds its volume like I intended. He doesn't appear to be at all amused. How long has he been listening to my conversation? My face is burning. I attempt to regain my composure while I reach down to pick up the water bottle that slipped from my grasp in my shock. "You're supposed to be at home resting," I say, trying to sound casual.
"I felt a compelling need to visit."
His light voice is a stark contrast to his icy gaze. My eyes flicker toward the stitches on his forehead. They should heal nicely, but even if they don't, something tells me Jonah can don an unsightly scar and still be attractive. There's a tidily folded piece of paper in Jonah's giant paw, which he calmly unfolds.
"Dear Jonah, this is for the toy plane that wouldn't fit my luggage, for stealing my luggage, for not helping me get beer for my dad."
He reads off his list of misdemeanors from the note I left, and I get caught up in watching his shapely lips move. How do they look so soft when so many of the words that come out of them are coarse?
"For defacing my father's duck wallpaper, if that was you."
I keep forgetting to ask my dad about that, but something tells me it has Jonah's signature all over it. Those lips finally curl into a smile. My eyes flit up to find his. Crap. He caught me admiring his mouth as he recites the last line from memory.
"Lastly, for crashing Betty and scaring me to death."
My heart pounds in my chest. I don't know why I added that last line. It certainly wasn't his fault that Betty went down. Just as calmly and methodically, he folds the page up and tucks it into his back pocket, the move stretching his gray t-shirt across his chest, highlighting hard curves that I try and fail miserably not to stare at. I struggle to twist off the cap on my water bottle, unable to find my strength for a grip. Jonah wordlessly slips it from my hands. The sound of snapping plastic fills the room.
"So how long did it take for you to work up the nerve to do it?"
I push aside my worries about what he might have overheard to level him with a flat, accusatory look. "No time at all, after I found my luggage hidden on your porch next to your raccoon."
"Yeah. Thanks for feeding Bandit, by the way."
He hands me back my water bottle, our fingers sliding over each other's in the exchange. "How long have you had my things?"
"Since I flew back to Anchorage the next night to get them,"
he admits casually, without hesitation or a hint of remorse. "But that's... You mean you've had my clothes sitting on your porch since Monday?" I punctuate the word with a smack against his arm. He flinches and then reaches for his sore shoulder. "Sorry." I wince, my anger dampened a touch. "And what, you got Billy to lie for you?"
"Nah, he had no idea I took him. He's been shitting himself and finding excuses, hoping they'd turn up."
I shake my head. "You're such an asshole." Jonah's gaze skitters over my bare collarbone, stalling at the decorative lace strap of my bra.
"You survived, didn't you?"
"So what? You were trying to prove a point?"
"Didn't I?"
I sigh. "Just when I was starting to like you." A deep bellow of laughter sails from his lips, and knowing eyes search my face.
"Oh, I think you like me just fine today."
My cheeks flame again. Seriously, how much did he hear? I move to get around him, to distance myself, but he smoothly steps forward into my space, thwarting my escape, making my pulse begin to race.
"You know it'll just grow back."
"Unfortunately, yes." He smirks.
"Unfortunate for whom?"
"For the people of Alaska. Thankfully, I'll be long gone by then." Jonah reaches up. I stiffen at the first sensation of his fingers fumbling with strands of my hair. "What are you doing?" I ask warily, even as my body reacts to his subtle touch, shivers running down my arms and along my collarbone, skittering over my chest.
"I was just curious what your hair felt like. It's soft."
He frowns thoughtfully.
"And so long. It must have taken years to grow."
"Not really. I've never had it short."
"Never?"
Unease slips down my spine. Never.
I think it would look good short.
He coils his fist around it to form a ponytail at the back, his fingertips grazing the nape of my neck ever so gently.
Short like Aggie's.
I don't have the right shape of face. I clear my throat against the wobble in my voice. His intense gaze searches my forehead, my cheekbones, my jawline, as if evaluating my claim.
I'm sure you have enough makeup to fix that.
I know what you're doing. With a light tug, he releases his grip on my hair.
And what am I doing?
Trying to scare me into thinking you're going to get even by cutting off my hair. He mock frowns.
What? Like sneak into your bedroom while you're asleep with a pair of scissors? I'd never do that. I'm not some sicko.
I did not sneak into your bedroom, I snap. And it's not like I disfigured you. I helped you.
Helped me?
He repeats. Yes, maybe now you have a shot at getting laid, as long as you don't speak. The wicked smile he flashes makes my throat go dry.
Do you think I have problems in that department, Calla?
I mean, with two-legged creatures. You arrogant son of a bitch, you totally stood there and listened to my conversation. My comeback might have been piercing and quick, but it's too late. He has a solid upper hand on me because he knows as well as I do that, despite everything, last night's vengeful grooming session has caused a totally unpredicted side effect. I'm now unmistakably attracted to the Yeti. God, this feels like ninth grade all over again. Billy Taylor, the captain of the hockey team, found out I had a maddening crush on him. The feelings weren't mutual. Keegan gently passed on the message, but my little girl infatuation became a source for teasing from his friends, and I spent the entire school year ducking into classrooms and hiding behind taller students every time I spotted him in the halls. That was the last time I ever let it slip that I might be interested in a guy before knowing that he was definitely interested in me. And the major difference here is that Billy Taylor was a nice guy who never embarrassed me about it. Jonah is not Billy Taylor.
George said he saw you come in here.
Agnes's sudden voice cuts into the tension. She rounds the table and wanders over to stand next to us.
You should have stayed home to rest.
As usual, Agnes's scolding is weak at best. I don't know how she's going to keep Mabel in line. Then again, how much trouble can a teenager get into around here? With no bars to frequent and alcohol difficult to find. Still, her entrance feels like a timely rescue. That's exactly what I just finished saying to him, I murmur, trying to regain some semblance of dignity.
So, you're trying out a new look there?
She asks mildly, the corners of her mouth twitching. I didn't mention my transgression to her, but my father must have.
Apparently,
Jonah finally says,
Calla decided she needed a change. It suits you.
Agnes's dark eyes flash to me and widen, the unspoken warning in them clear. Do you realize what kind of hell you've invited into your life, you foolish girl? It does suit him, doesn't it? I make a point of cocking my head and letting my eyes drag along his jawline in an admiring way. My neighbor's sheepdog always looks much better after getting clipped, too. And it helps with the fleas. Agnes snorts. I can't even begin to read the look that takes over Jonah's face as his eyes burn holes into mine, but it's made my stomach roll and my blood race all the same. Sharon wanted to see me about something, I lie, sidestepping around him. I stroll for the door, forcing my legs to move slowly so as not to look like the sprinting chicken that I truly am. Chapter 19.
Damn rain. Makes everything so damp.
My dad mutters through another cough, his gray gaze on the living room window and the porch screen beyond, soaked by the steady rainfall. It started as a light sprinkle around 2 this afternoon, earlier than expected, and quickly evolved into a hard downpour that grounded the rest of the flights. Sharon's husband, Max, is stranded in Nome for the night, much to her dismay.
At least they're saying the worst of it should be moved out by tomorrow afternoon. Let's hope anyway.
Cough, cough. Can I ask you a serious question? It's a moment before my dad answers.
Sure, kiddo.
The endearment is there, but the reluctance in his voice is unmistakable. Do you have a thing for Julia Roberts? He lets out a shaky sigh of relief and then chuckles.
I don't know. Do I?
I know what he was afraid of, that I was going to push for information about his diagnosis, his prognosis, that I wanted to know if these frequent coughing fits he's had the last couple of days are more than on account of damp air and running through a field. The truth is, though, I'm finding lately that I want to think about and talk about the coming battle as much as he does. Not at all. You have every single movie she's ever been in both VHS and DVD. So yeah, I'm pretty sure you have a thing for her. A thoughtful smile stretches my dad's lips.
Her laugh. It reminds me of Susan's laugh.
I frown as the Pretty Woman movie credits roll along the TV screen, trying to recall the sound. I never made the connection, but you're right. It does, kind of. Mom has one of those show-stopping laughs, an infectious melody that carries through rooms and cuts stranger sentences short as they search for the source.
You know, that's what made me introduce myself to her that night. I heard her before I saw her, and then I saw her and I thought, I've got to get up the nerve to meet that woman if it's the last thing I ever do.
He studies his hands in quiet thought for a moment.
She was probably living up here 6 months or so when I first noticed. I hadn't heard that laugh in a while.
Do you still love her?
Oh, kiddo. But your mom and me had.
His voice drifts as he shakes his head. I know. It was never going to work. It can't work. It will never work. I get it. But do you still love her? He pauses for a long moment.
I'll always love her. Always. I wish that was enough, but it's not. For a while there, I believed she'd have a change of heart and fly back. You know, spend a few months with her family and then come back to me after the thaw.
And she was hoping you'd have a change of heart and fly out to us.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we were never going to work. I'm glad she found someone who's good for her. And you.
What about you?
Hmm?
Another woman.
Oh.
He hesitates.
I did try once with someone else who means a lot to me, but we both figured out pretty quick that it's hard to make things work when another woman is already taking up center stage. It wouldn't be fair to anyone to have to compete, and I just don't seem in any rush to move on. I guess marriage just ain't for me.
Are you talking about Agnes?
Jeez.
He rubs his eyes and then chuckles.
You really are grilling me tonight, aren't you?
Sorry.
No, don't be. It's good that we're talking about this. It's important to talk. I wish I had talked more way back when.
He sighs.
Mabel wasn't even 2, so she doesn't remember. It wasn't ever anything official or big. Just some long talks, some ideas that maybe something could be evolving.
And then it didn't? My dad's lips pressed together in thought.
Agnes is everything I should want in a wife. She's kind and funny and patient. She loves her family and Alaska. She takes care of me even though I don't ask her to. I honestly don't know what I'd do without her. She'll make someone an incredible wife one day.
I wait for the but that I sense hanging in the air, though I think I've already heard it before. Yeah, well, I'm not Susan. That's what Agnes said my first night. She didn't sound bitter. More like resigned to the fact. My dad sighs.
I keep telling her that she should find someone. There's been interest from other men, but she's never given them the time of day. I think she's getting as set in her ways as I am, so we all just keep living like we do.
I think it's nice, the way things work around here. The way you all look out for each other. I mean, Mabel brings you dinner. You leave a pot of coffee out for Jonah every morning. It's nice. It's like family.
Yeah, well.
He scratches the gray stubble coating his chin.
They are my family.
I'm glad to know you have people here who care about you, who will take care of you after I'm gone. And that I got to know them. His mouth curves into a thoughtful frown.
Even Jonah?
Even him, I admit reluctantly, adding an eye roll. Jonah, who thankfully seemed to be giving me a wide berth today as he helped my dad and Agnes rework flights after yesterday's delays, while I hid in a corner with my headphones on, finishing Wilde's history page with a picture of my grandparents standing beside the first plane they ever bought. Pretending I didn't notice every time he strolled by.
Well, that's something.
With a yawn, he shimmies out of his chair and reaches into his vest pocket.
Listen, I'm gonna step outside for a minute and then head to bed after. I'm beat.
I can't help but glare at the pack of cigarettes in his hand. He notices and sighs.
I've been a smoker for over 40 years, Calla.
And it's going to kill you if you don't stop. A reality that has been there since the moment we met face to face in the hallway for the first time. And yet it concerns me that much more now, probably because I don't feel like I'm looking at a stranger anymore.
Doc says it won't make much of a difference, so why put myself through that?
I guess, if that's what your doctor said. He opens his mouth, but then hesitates.
You're yawning. Go to bed, kiddo.
I am exhausted after last night's restless sleep. Hey, do you think we could start locking the door at night? Dad frowns.
Why? Something got you spooked?
Besides the neighbor who wants to take hedge clippers to my hair?
Is that what Jonah said he'd do?
He chuckles.
He's not actually going to do that.
I level him with a knowing look.
I would never allow him to do that to you.
He corrects, a touch more sternly. You said so yourself. He's not going to let me get away with it, even if it's a huge improvement. Even if my blood raced every time I so much as heard his voice today, and my attention was only ever half on what I was doing, the other half wading through our past conversations, replaying words and looks, only now from the new version of Jonah, the one who'd stop me in my tracks if we were passing on the street. I've somehow conveniently forgotten all the unpleasant exchanges and his games. Those were all the work of the angry Yeti. My mind, or more likely my hormones, seems to be trying to compartmentalize Jonah in some sort of Jekyll and Hyde situation so I can freely lust over the hot Viking version.
Don't forget, he hasn't been cleared to fly by the FAA yet. One call from me.
My dad winks. I'm sure he's only kidding, but I appreciate it all the same. Can we just lock the door anyway? He shrugs.
If that makes you sleep better, sure.
Good. Thanks. I collect our dinner dishes. Oh, and I'm making overnight oats for breakfast. Do you want me to make you some?
I don't normally eat breakfast, but...
He seems to mull it over.
Sure. I'd love that.
'Kay. I smile with satisfaction. Night, Dad. The heavy rain last night brought with it cooler weather this morning. Goose flesh instantly sprouts along my bare skin as I step out of the steamy bathroom. I hug my towel tightly around my body as I dart to my bedroom, intent on dressing quickly. I catch a familiar scent the second I step inside and pause to inhale deeply. That's Jonah's soap. But it's not possible. I locked the kitchen door before I jumped into the shower. I scan my room warily. My phone and laptop are on the chair. The clothes I laid out for the day are on the bed, untouched. The rest of them hang neatly in the closet. In a half turn, I realize the problem. The top of the dresser is bare. Every can, every bottle, every brush, every last cosmetic I own, gone. I dive for my purse. He's even taken my essentials from there. My compact powder, my mascara, my favorite blush lipstick. Jonah! His name is a curse on my tongue. I rush out of my bedroom and down the hall. He's in the kitchen, leaning casually against the counter with his back to the sink, his legs crossed at the ankles, eating a bowl of overnight oats. My bowl of overnight oats. A key dangles on a ring from his finger in a taunting way. A key to this house, I'm guessing. Where are my things? I demand, my annoyance clouding all other thoughts for the moment. His hand pauses halfway to his mouth, and his eyes drag over my body, stalling at my bare thighs for a few too many beats, reminding me exactly how short this towel is, about 4 inches away from me being mortified, before continuing his meal.
What things?
He says casually. Everything you took from my room.
Oh, those things.
He takes his time licking the spoon.
They're in a safe place.
The white shirt beneath his flannel jacket has damp streaks over it. A dreary rain still falls outside, though it's lighter than yesterday. Light enough for Jonah to trek all the way home with my things, and then back again just to taunt me?
At my house,
he confirms, as if reading my mind.
And you'll never find them.
This isn't funny. There's over $1,000 worth of makeup there. Eyeshadow palettes that will crumble if handled roughly, and I'm guessing Jonah wasn't overly gentle.
Shit. $1,000. I think that's a felony in Alaska.
Not that he sounds at all concerned. Maybe I should call the cops then.
Yeah, good idea. Do me a favor, though. Make sure you ask for Roper. He's been complaining that he's bored.
He points toward the bowl with his spoon.
This is good, by the way. What is this?
My frustration with him swells. It's mine. I storm forward, and with one hand still gripping my towel to keep it in place, I yank the bowl from his grasp. Taking a clean spoon from the dish rack, I spin on my heels and storm back to my room, slamming the door behind me. A knock sounds a few minutes later. What? I snap, yanking my leggings up over my hips.
I'll give everything back.
You'd better.
Eventually.
A strangled sound escapes my throat. You are such a dick!
What? I'm just helping you. Maybe now you have a shot at getting laid.
His amusement rings clear as he echoes my words from yesterday. I don't have problems in that department either, I throw back haughtily. There's a pause.
Who's Corey?
My ex. I tug my socks on.
Why'd you break up?
Do I want to indulge his curiosity? Will he somehow use it against me? We grew apart. Or got bored. I don't know. I ended it before I came here. I throw open the door to find Jonah leaning casually against the wall, his gaze on the ceiling above, giving me a clear view of a jutting Adam's apple. Even his neck is pleasant to look at. Blue eyes settle on me, and I momentarily forget that I'm irritated. Why do you want to know about me and Corey? He shrugs.
Just curious.
His gaze slides down the violet tunic shirt that clings to my frame and my black leggings below. The look on his face is unreadable, and yet it makes my pulse quicken all the same. I sigh heavily and try a more civilized approach. Jonah, can I please have my stuff?
No.
There's no hesitation, no teasing inflection anymore. Fine, I say curtly. I'll have fun trashing your house until I find it. Because he can't stay home all day. I move to march past him, but he stops me with a swift hand on my side, and then his other hand on my other side, gripping me tightly as he herds me backward until I feel the cool wall through the back of my shirt. My hands fly up between us instinctively to press against his chest, unsure of exactly what's happening, my mind not registering much beyond how solid and warm his body is, how my palms curve around ridges. Not until I dare look up. Not until I see just how dark and intense his eyes have turned, do I begin to see it. This newly found attraction might not be one-sided after all. One, two, three beats hang as we seem to silently measure each other, as I struggle to grasp exactly how this has happened. And then Jonah leans down and skates his mouth across mine, in a kiss softer than I could ever imagine him capable of. His lips taste like mint toothpaste and the brown sugar from my oatmeal, and the soft, freshly cut hair of his beard tickles my skin in an oddly intimate way. I can't breathe. He pauses and then makes a second pass. He's testing me to see how I'll respond. I thought you didn't like my kind, I whisper. My fingers too timid to venture over this massive canvas of chest. He loosens his death grip on my waist, letting one hand drop to curl around my hip, while the other smooths upward, over my back and shoulder blades, to wrap around my nape. His fingers thread through my hair, pulling at it gently, forcing my head back.
I guess I was wrong,
he admits, in a voice so deep and husky that I feel it in the depths of my belly. And then he's kissing me without hesitation, his mouth coaxing mine open, his tongue sliding against mine, his breaths melding with mine. Blood rushes to my ears as my heart pounds with an intoxicating, addicting thrill I haven't felt coursing through my limbs in forever. Heat floods right to my core. I'm vaguely aware of footfalls pounding up the steps outside, and then Mabel's loud, excited voice calls out, "Calla, are you ready?" Jonah peels away and takes a step back, letting out a soft, shaky breath as he goes. It's the first and only sign that I might be affecting him as much as he is affecting me. Hey! Mabel stands in the hallway, dripping water from her canary-yellow rain slicker onto the floor, her wide-eyed gaze flickering back and forth between us. What are you guys doing? I stutter. Is she too young to sense the tension in the air, to figure out what she just interrupted?
I'm just giving Calla something she needs,
Jonah says, back to his normal, cool self, though with a hint of amusement in his voice. I turn to stare at him, momentarily speechless. Well, if Mabel hasn't already picked up on it. With a knowing smirk, he reaches into his back pocket and pulls something out.
Here.
He tosses it in the air and I fumble to catch it. It's my antiperspirant stick.
See? I'm not a complete dick.
He strolls away, playfully mussing Mabel's hair on his way past. Moments later, the door closes with a thud. Mabel's face crinkles up. Jonah bought you deodorant? I'm too overwhelmed to try and explain any of this. What do I need to bring with me? I ask, ignoring her question. Just yourself. I've got you covered. She grins and holds up her arms. A yellow slicker dangles from one hand and a stack of baskets sits in the other. Perfect. A morning of picking berries in the cold rain with a bunch of strangers is probably the best thing I can do right now, while I try to sort out what the hell just happened between Jonah and me. And whether I want it to happen again. Chapter 20. Max has his heart set on Thornton, after his grandfather. Sharon's lip curls in an unpleasant way. I shrug. It could be Thor, for short. That's a cool name. Unique. Except his mother would refuse to shorten it. Everything would be Thornton this and Thornton that. She rolls her eyes. I've given up a lot already, being here and all. I am not naming my son Thornton. I don't blame you, I mock whisper. Where are you moving to, anyway? Back to Portland, Oregon. I can't believe I'll be home soon. Sharon's hand smooths over her belly in a slow circular motion while the other reaches for another blueberry from the basket Mabel and I brought to the airport. After several hours of crouching in drizzle among an endless stretch of prickly bushes, my thigh muscles are still burning, and I haven't been able to shake this cold-to-the-bone chill. I still remember the day Max came home 3 years ago and said, "Babe, guess what? I got the job! We're moving to Alaska!" I didn't even know he'd applied. She chuckles, shaking her head. Don't get me wrong. We're going to miss the people like crazy. But everything is so hard up here. And now we're going to have a baby to add to it. I'm betting Sharon and my mom would get along well, commiserating. And Max is okay with leaving? For now. He's already talking about coming back in 5 years to work for Ren again. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Or should I say, airstrip. In 5 years, I can't help but do the math. I'll be 31 in 5 years. Where will I be by then? Back in Toronto, obviously. How many trips back to Alaska will I have made? Will Dad come to see me? Will I still be living with Mom and Simon? Or will I be married and gone? Will I be rubbing my pregnant belly like Sharon is? Will my dad be around for any of it? I swallow against the lump in my throat. A shrunken Alaska Native woman shuffles toward the desk, clutching a small weekend bag. Her gray hair is wrapped in a hot pink floral handkerchief, but otherwise her clothes are drab shades of brown and green, meant for warmth and nothing more. Any news yet? She asks politely, smiling, as if she hasn't been sitting in this lobby since 7 this morning, which is how long most of these people have been lingering, according to Sharon. People who've been playing the waiting game